All right, welcome back. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Hour number two, and our next guest, Jason Isaac, joining us now, founder of the American Energy Institute and a former House of Representative. Jason, welcome. How are you?
It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it very much. And again, as I said earlier, thanks for accommodating us on our phones. And for those of you listening, some of you may have been trying to call in that last hour. I apologize. You cannot. If you've got any questions for us, please send me a text, 307-200-8222. But Jason, you have found, or there's been some studies, I think, that have found that while people driving EVs, and full disclaimer, I own one. I bought one a few years ago, really, and I'm a car guy. I've got another show that I do on Saturdays, Drive Radio, and I'm a car guy at heart. And I wanted to really learn and know about EVs, not from the political green side of it, because no, they're not green. In fact, I've said it for years. If you think you're buying any new vehicle to save the planet, stop. A, the planet doesn't need saving. B, you're not going to save it by buying a new car. But beyond that, I've learned a lot about them by owning them and so on. And there's a lot of folks out there that think you're going to save a ton of money in buying one. But let's get down to the brass tacks. What does it really cost when it comes to fueling an electric vehicle?
Yeah, when you look at it, you're actually paying probably close to $1.21 for your incremental electricity cost wherever you're charging. But then there's additional fees on top of that. And over a 10-year ownership of an electric vehicle, the true cost for charging an electric vehicle, when you break it down by gallon equivalent, you're closer to over $17 per gallon. Now, you've got a lot of listeners out there you need to send thank you notes to, because they're the ones that are covering the additional cost for you to charge your electric vehicle.
Right. And I know, in fact, even the buying of said vehicles, a lot of folks are utilizing the credits that are out there. And again, as I don't think we should subsidize anyways. That's a whole nother conversation, Jason. You know, Jason, I could probably have, and I do have here on a routine basis. I am not a subsidy guy, whether it be farming or otherwise. I'm not a subsidy guy. I don't think that's the way the free market should work. It's not a free market when you subsidize, by the way. It's why I'm so much against it. If electric vehicles are to make it on their own, or to make it, I should say, they need to make it on their own without any subsidies of any kind, by the way.
Yeah, because those subsidies get pushed down to the least among us. They get pushed down to people that are buying internal combustion engines.
Correct.
And so the research...
Or not buying them at all.
They're absolutely not. You know, a year ago, there was about 34,000 electric vehicles sitting on lots. Today, that number is over 121,000. The dealers are finally asking for some reprieve because
Correct.
They're sitting on their lots longer than they would like. And then they have to put the infrastructure on their lots at their cost to charge them.
That's right.
And the costs get pushed down to people. So if you do buy an internal combustion engine, you're contributing a significant portion, and a per gallon equivalent of that is about $6 that someone that's buying an internal combustion engine is contributing because of these things called CAFE credits. And that's
Correct.
Why the American Energy Institute exists, is to end subsidies. Subsidies for oil, gas, coal, nuclear, wind, solar, you name it. We are a free market first institution that opposes any subsidization or market distorting policies like ESG. So yes, there are American energy producers that want to end all subsidies, which would actually reduce the cost of energy for the consumers.
And really quick, Jason,
through the roof.
I'm assuming level the playing field as well. And I'm sure that you could speak to that even better than I. Typically speaking, and you know, you and I could go through the nuances of this, but typically speaking, subsidizing doesn't level the field. It actually picks winners and losers, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And anytime you subsidize anything, it results in higher costs.
Right.
There's no example that you can tell me otherwise. You get the government more involved in something, whether it's higher ed, healthcare, automobiles, the cost increase to all consumers. And that makes those products more scarce. And that hurts consumers as well.
Right. And for everybody listening, please, let me make sure that we're clear on this as well, Jason. There's a difference between an all-out tax credit subsidy versus depreciation in the way the tax code works. We're not talking tax code. We're talking actual credits and subsidies, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. When you look at things like the investment tax credit that every company gets, every business owner gets, you know, and there are certain deductions that business owners take. But when you have a direct subsidy, like for the federal government, it's $7,500 tax credit available for an electric vehicle.
Correct.
You add on the additional cost, these corporate average fuel economy, the CAFE standards,
right,
that tells automobile manufacturers your fleet has to be at this level of miles per gallon across the entire fleet of what you produce. Well, some of them can't do that.
Right. Most of them can't do that, by the way.
Yeah, they can't. And Tesla, they created this multiplier that save a gallon of gas. You don't get credit for 1 gallon of gas saved. You get credit for 6.67 gallons
of gas
saved.
That's right. That's right.
It's just this arbitrary number. It's complete fraud.
It is. That's right.
That's where Tesla made $1.78 billion in revenue last year on selling those credits to other automobile manufacturers so they could arbitrarily raise their fuel economy across their fleet using credits created by the government. It's a scam, and we're all paying more for it.
Yeah, and I've said this for years, and I, you know, you can either, I'm not a Tesla, you know, a Musk fanboy by any means. I do think some things that he's done politically speaking of late is pretty decent, so I'll give the guy credit where credit's due. And I will also give a person credit where if they know these things are there and they can take advantage of them, Jason, I'm not faulting anybody for that. We created the system that he's thereby playing with. He didn't create it. We did. Or government did, I should say.
Yeah, the people that we elected created this program based on false fear, you know, that we only
have
6 years left to live, or we were supposed to die 2 decades ago, according to Al Gore. You know, whatever this fake number is, because people are part of a climate cult that are trying to scare us into action.
That's right.
You know, John Kerry today saying that we've got to eliminate all coal-fired power plants.
Ridiculous.
It's what we really need more of in this country is more coal-fired power plant. And as I testified multiple times in front of the U.S. Congress, I've said of all the technology the Chinese steal from us, it'd be nice if they would utilize our pollution control technologies because we've become world leaders in clean air in this country. We've reduced pollution nearly 80% over the last 5 decades. And so the left realizes that we're victorious in that front. We're number one when it comes to access to clean and safe drinking water. Well, let's focus on this little trace gas percent of the atmosphere.
That's right.
And they said, let's just focus on this because, well, first, it's necessary for life on Earth, and it's made possible by when you burn fossil fuels that create prosperity and environmental leadership. Those are bad things, according to the left. And so they're just trying to control every aspect of our lives by this cult-like fascination with decarbonization.
It really is a cult. It's very much a cult. And really, as a side note, and part of why I also drive an EV is, and I'm learning more about them, is if you're a car person and you love the exhilaration of driving instant power, then you'd know exactly what I mean. My point is, even for those individuals that just like the whole technological aspect of EVs, to your point a moment ago, we actually need more coal-fired plants or more power, if you would, to actually be able to power them.
So when you're charging one EV, you're pulling the electricity of a small grocery store.
Correct.
When you're charging four, it's pulling the electricity off the grid equivalent of a Walmart supercenter. So think about that. You're absolutely right. And those costs are picked up by all ratepayers because you have to upgrade your transmission, your distribution.
I'm not against. Our grid is dilapidated. We need major, major upgrades. I'm just saying do that in the right manner. Let the free market dictate that, not through all of these stupid subsidies that you and I are now in debt with our great-grandchildren over.
Yeah, you're spot on. And if we don't get the market free, our grid is going to continue to fall apart. We're going to continue to see blackouts and brownouts around this country. And then you're going to lead to deindustrialization. It's happened in Germany. It's happened in the United Kingdom. Manufacturing is fleeing those countries because power has become so scarce and expensive. And that's the last thing we want. We produce things in this country more responsibly than anywhere else. We need to be producing more of the things that we want here in this country because, again, we produce them better than anywhere else. But we have to have power to do that. And you need power from coal, natural gas, and a lot more nuclear.
Jason Isaac again with us, founder of the American Energy Institute. And as you can tell, former House of Representative as well, and understands fully what we're talking about. Jason, when it comes to a lot of these quote-unquote mandates, even mandates not only on the CAFE side, but how many EVs the government wants to see, which, again, being a car guy and understanding that whole world and the whole aspect of, you know, I owned repair shops for years and years and years. I still coach automotive repair shops. I understand, not bragging, but I understand that world very, very well. I also understand consumer adoption is very slow. Early adopters got in, folks like myself even that wanted to learn about these vehicles. Those folks have bought and maybe even bought a second time, but those are the individuals that are, how should I say this, Jason? There's a limited supply of that buyer, and the market share right now is about 8%. Government wants to see that they'll go all the way up to 30%, and frankly, it's a number we're just not going to see. It's not going to exist.
No, you're right. There's only a limited supply of wealthy people that can afford to buy these, what are really just a nice gadget. I mean,
That's what it is. You're correct.
It is a gadget. And what you're seeing, with the exception of Tesla, because people are very brand loyal to Tesla.
They're fanboys. That's another cult following, by the way.
Yeah, I've got one of those with some technology products that I use. That's my addiction, if you will.
Right.
But it's not in vehicles. But outside of Tesla, the other automobile manufacturers, people that have bought an EV and then they go to buy another car a few years later, they're getting rid of that EV. Over 50% of them are getting rid of that electric vehicle and going to an internal combustion engine.
Yeah, there's limited. And to your point earlier, and I've talked about this in depth because I own one, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to have other vehicles outside of that, where if I want to take a trip to the mountains, or I want to go for a day and a half, or I want to go coast to coast, I've got vehicles to do that. I'm not relying on the plug-in vehicle only. And that's one thing government has forgotten. Well, I shouldn't say forgotten. Government wants to see us not drive any farther than what they dictate we drive. In my opinion, is that's where a lot of this EV push is also coming from.
You're right. I think government loved the lockdowns because we were stuck in our homes.
That's right.
Depending on the whims of the government. But I will tell you, there's one thing that the lockdowns proved. You took 40 to 50% of the vehicles off the road, and air quality in some of the cities in the United States didn't improve.
Right.
It actually got worse because our air quality is near a natural state in this country. You did see massive, significant improvements in air quality in places like China. And that's why I make the joke about pollution control technology, because that last year they're building 2 coal-fired power plants a week. They're continuing on that trend. And it would be nice if they would utilize pollution control technology. It would improve human health.
Agreed.
Because some of that pollution at certain concentrations is not healthy. But we've done that here in this country. And we need the rest. I advocated for a Pittsburgh Accord when our former president said he doesn't represent the people of Paris. He represents the people of Pittsburgh. And I said that he needs to call on our trading partners to meet safe air quality standards, because that would actually improve the environment around the world.
Agree. Now, somebody just called in a moment ago. Our phones are back up, but we'll leave you where we're at right now, Jason. Somebody asked, what do I feel? And maybe I can get your opinion on this as well. On hybrids, Toyota's really pushing the hybrid end. Their CEO even has said, listen, we're not going to go this full EV way. We'll let the market dictate what we need to do. The market has dictated that they do have a fondness of hybrids, which, by the way, that technology works extremely well. And Toyota's been a very, very big leader in that. What are your thoughts on the hybrid versus the full plug-in EV?
That is where the market would have gone, and I hope it does correct and goes back to hybrids if we can eliminate some of this federal market manipulation.
Yep.
Because that is the most efficient way to go.
Yep.
The truck, and my background was in the trucking industry. I worked for Eaton Corporation, and they were looking at these hybrid components, but the government was telling them you need to go full electric. There's reason why Dodge Ram just built an electric truck with a natural gas.
That's right. That's right.
Charger built into.
Well, what they did is they stole the idea from the Chevy Volt with a V back in the day, because that's really all a Volt was. All Dodge did, or Ram did, was basically take that same concept, which, again, free market. That was at a time where GM wasn't being mandated build the Volt. They were doing all of that R&D, Jason, on their own. They came up with a great product, which, by the way, I don't know why they quit. Well, I know why they quit making it. They weren't getting a return on that investment. It was so stinking expensive that they went the government mandate way, because they could get the subsidies. Again, we go back to what you said earlier and opened up with. The subsidies took away a great car, the Volt, and put them into a full EV. And now Ram is going to resurrect that, get 700 miles out of a tank of gas when it's all said and done.
Yeah, but they get the credit of being an electric vehicle.
That's right.
And they get that multiplier.
That's right.
So they're saving 700 gallons of fuel for a trip.
Yep.
Then they're going to multiply that times 6.67 and spread that across their fleet.
And essentially,
arbitrary.
Even though it's a plug-in vehicle that meets all of the determiners that Jason just said for the government sides of the fence, folks, it really is at the end of the day. I know it's not a true hybrid. It's a plug-in vehicle with a gas-powered engine that charges the battery. But for all intensive purposes, Jason, it's a hybrid.
Yeah, it's identifying as an electric vehicle, but you're right. It's a hybrid
it
with
really
a natural
is.
Gas generator on board.
That's exactly right.
I hope that we
which,
can
by the way, I'm not
policy.
Against. I mean, that is great technology, and as a car guy myself, if that works, fabulous. Take it. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Look, I've got a natural gas Ford F-150 pickup truck that runs on both gasoline and natural gas, and I can drive it all the way from Texas all the way to Colorado because I've done it several times and fuel up on natural gas.
Nothing wrong with
that.
And
I'm paying less than $2 a gallon for fuel.
Yep.
And I'm buying fuel that I know 100% comes from the United States. That's one thing I loved about natural gas.
And the fact on that vehicle, just again, being a car guy, that engine will burn so much cleaner and last so much longer by doing so. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thanks so much. Now, if I could just keep the teenage boys away from it, it might stay out of the shop.
There we go. Jason, this has been a joy. You, as you can tell, you're in great company. You are welcome anytime. I love talking about this, because it's my passion. I'm a car guy. I love talking about all of this. And I also don't like the fact that the average U.S. citizen is being hoodwinked by the government and told a pack of lies that aren't true, by the way.
No, you're absolutely right. And we've got to get rid of some of these subsidies and get as close to a free market as we can.
Fully
so we
agree.
Can really see some advancements on the automobile industry.
Well, hey, Jason, again, if you're welcome anytime. Appreciate you joining us. Thank you, by the way, very much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.